Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another special edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. This is the 2024 CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinals review show as we look at those clubs in both MLS and Liga MX that advanced from the quarterfinals into the semifinals. We're supposed to have a first leg show last Friday, unfortunately, due to circumstances and technical issues with signing into the switchboard, was not able to do a first leg review show. So we're going to combine it all in this show tonight. But once again, as we have seen, of course, how the mighty continue to advance in this competition, Pachuca, Club America, and Monterrey. The lone Major League Soccer club is the Columbus Crew. And of course, just more poor showings from MLS sides. We're going to get into it right now. And originally, Sam Minton was supposed to be joining me in these shows. Unfortunately, he is on vacation. So Sam Minton, of course, writes about the Revolution on the Blazing Musket. Please, if you're a Revolution supporter, go and read his articles there at the Blazing Musket. I believe they are currently on Substack.com. So, but once again, the Blazing Musket, head on over there. If you're a New England Revolution supporter, support his writings, support everything he does covering New England soccer in the New England area. It's just wonderful to have that dedication by Mr. Minton. Of course, I do know him through my days and his days when we were at SB Nation before they cut off all their Major League Soccer content, and which is no longer on their perusal. So that's a real shame. But once again, please follow independent soccer journalism as they do a great job of covering the game and covering the leagues and the, you know, in the sport in the United States. So the New England Revolution on a combined aggregate fall to the mighty Club America by a final of 9-2 on aggregate. And listen, this was really no contest at all. I mean, I know the Revolution tried their best, and that's all you can really ask for. But when you give up 4 at home in the first leg, and then you head down to the Estadio Azteca, and you're still getting destroyed. And even though they put in 2, the Revolution, but they gave up another 5 at the Estadio Azteca. I mean, look, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to have to take it on the chin. And even if they did find a way to fight back and come back, it just wasn't going to be enough, because it's just a tall task to be down by 4. And it's not just 4. They were away goals. 4 by Club America heading to Gillette Stadium and basically showing the Revolution who is the real boss and who's the real threat. Henry Martin in the 16th minute. 9 later, Alejandro Zendejas. And then in the second half, Christian Calderon in the 64th. And then in first second half stoppage time, Brian Rodriguez buries his chance to really add on to the aggregate in the first leg. I mean, what could they do? They could do nothing. Earl Edwards Jr. basically had to take it all night long, just all night long at Foxborough Stadium. And, you know, the back line really destroyed. David Romney, Henry Kessler, Jonathan Mensah, Ryan Spalding. What more can they do? DeJuan Jones, obviously. You know, what could they do? Nothing. They could do absolutely nothing in this match. It was hard and difficult to see them floundering and being abused the way they were in the first leg. And even though originally the first leg was supposed to be at the Estadio Azteca, but the Revolution requested a switch to host the first leg because of, in my opinion, poor scheduling by those in the Revolution Patriot front office due to Gillette Stadium hosting a motorbike rally on the date of where the second leg was supposed to be at Gillette. Instead, they granted it. They allowed Club America to have the second leg advantage. But it really didn't matter because this was no advantage for the Revolution. No advantage whatsoever. They got bombarded, destroyed. And I wouldn't have blamed Revolution fans if they were going to leave at halftime. I wouldn't have blamed the Fort if the supporters group at the Fort, or they're called the New England Rebellion, if they left at halftime, because the truth is this was a shellacking. This was a clinic. This is what happens when you face a mighty club from Liga MX and they are able to pull off that. Nothing you can say, nothing you can do. They just went out there. They did a job. Great support from Mexican fans who support Club America. And they went out there and they did a job. Without a doubt, they did a job. And then when the second leg went to the Estadio Azteca, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What we saw in the second leg was a statement by Club America. It's not just that they were home. Not just they were at home. They told the Revolution, and they told all the supporters of the Revolution and all MLS fans, we are the mighty Club America. We don't care who you are. We don't care what you think you may try. We don't care why you think you might have a chance. We are going to put our foot down. We're going to bury the net with all these goals. And we are going to tell you why we are this good and why we are considered one of the great clubs in this region. And that's what they did. Frequently, succinctly, and clinically buried five more goals into the back of the net. And wouldn't you know it, Henry Martin got his second in this tie. Alejandro Zendejas got his second in this tie. Brian Rodriguez got his second in this tie. Only ones adding their goals in this one, Diego Valdez and Julian Quiñones. 21st minute by Valdez. 34th minute by Quiñones. First half stoppage time by Henry Martin. Alejandro Zendejas in the 57th minute, and that's a U.S. international as well. Brian Rodriguez in the 76th minute. Even though Giacomo Veroni got a brace in the 65th and in second half stoppage time, the truth is that wasn't really enough. And I knew it wasn't going to be enough. After all, it was 8-0 before Veroni put his in. 9-1, then 9-2 on aggregate. And even if they were able to level the away goals advantage away from Club America, I mean, seriously, I know you're thinking, well, they might have a slim chance. But listen, it wasn't a slim chance. It was a minute slim chance. Minute. And when you're saying minute, there was no way in hell that the New England Revolution was ever going to fight back and take this tie, unless the referee hands out five red cards. And we all know that was never going to happen. That was never going to happen, period. Did you think at any time Club America was going to get booked or sent off by any of their players, which they knew they had to play this close to the vest? And they did. They were dominant. They were solid. They were a well-oiled machine. And as I said, there was no way, absolutely no way, that Club America was going to let the Revolution sneak back in. No way. All you can say is this with Club America. They know how to wipe out an opponent, especially in international cup competition. They have been around for a very, very long time. And even though the Revolution is one of the charter members of this league, past 25 years, honestly and truthfully, they were not going to come back. Look, I'm not here to be a Debbie Downer. I'm not here to tell all of you what is correct and what is wrong or anything like that. I am here to tell you all that I'm a realist. I am a realist. There is no way at all that the Revolution were going to come back. Because once again, I know that when it's the national team, our players are improving overseas. They come back and they do fight against these players who continue to ply their trade in Liga MX. So internationally, the players are not up to standard. They're not up to par. But when we're talking about the club level in Liga MX, this is where they have the advantage over MLS clubs, because once again, they play their season earlier than MLS plays their seasons. And even though, you know, it's a proud moment when the Seattle Sounders finally became the first MLS club to win the CONCACAF Champions League, Champions Cup title. The truth of the matter is this. Liga MX does not have these silly roster rules that Major League Soccer clubs have. And even though some of the owners still want to fight and they still want to say we want to make the rosters bigger and we have to get rid of some of these rules to, you know, compete against these Liga MX teams in the Champions Cup, an international cup competition, not this silly League's Cup, this international cup competition. That's when we will finally say MLS is on par with Liga MX, because these stupid roster rules must be removed. Whether they get chopped off straight away or you want to go year by year, fine. Truth is, these are the rules that are hampering our league to becoming a true and dominant powerhouse. Until that happens, we're going to be considered the doormat to Liga MX in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, period. No matter what you say, no matter how you say it, this is the situation that is plaguing this league. We got to get rid of these roster rules. We got to get rid of them fast, or else we're never going to be that good against Liga MX in the Champions Cup, and it's got to be done for next year, if it's possible. We'll see what happens. My first guest tonight, he covers Inter Miami on Miami Football on Miami TV, and he is the one only Peter Brown joining me tonight. Peter, good evening. Tough result, tough tie against Monterrey, but in your mind, did Tata Martino manage the second leg like he should have, or do you think he quit at halftime?
I don't know if he quit, but he definitely didn't do everything he could do. I mean, no substitution? I mean, that's like kind of unheard of, right? It seems foolish. So I don't know if, you know, he said his reasoning for it is that it just wasn't enough experience on the bench. And that's just BS. You've got players, sure, they're young because we got a ton of injuries. But that's the hands you're dealt, and when you're playing in altitude, you're playing in Mexico, you got players that are going to be tired. You need to make changes, and if you don't believe in the players that are on the team, they shouldn't be on the team. So, yeah, he didn't help anything, and by not making any adjustments in the game. And then on top of that, you know, he constantly wants to play this five man back. I can't even remember if we've won a game with that. Because we've lost most of them, at the best, it just doesn't work with this group, and he's trying to force feed it. And you know, when we play with four in the back, we're a much better team. So why are you playing five in the back in the most important game of this club's lifetime? It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't, and it's really disheartening to see. Not so much that Tata Martino did not have confidence in these players, and I agree with you. If you don't have confidence in them, well, then you shouldn't have put him into the 18-man game roster for this one. But when you have these great players from the days of Barcelona, and they come over here, and you expect them, and I understand Monterrey, there's altitude, and you know it's a tough place to play if you're not used to the altitude, but still, though, you have these great players that look like they're over the hill. They really
are.
Slow. I know, but I mean, it looks. It's a lot worse than, you know. It's just very disheartening to see these great players being reduced to grumpy old men.
Yeah, I thought we were going to see with the dust up that they had in the locker room at Chase Stadium, and the arguments that they had, and I thought Messi was going to show them the face of the devil, as they were basically claiming. I thought it was going to be the fire in his belly to prove everybody wrong, and it just wasn't there. None of the three really looked great. There was a few opportunities here and there, but we didn't look very, we passed the ball around a lot. We had a lot of possession, but didn't really do much with it. I don't think we had very few shots. It took forever to get one shot. So whatever they were doing in the attack wasn't working. Maybe a little bit of disinterest at times, it looks like. I'm sure that's not the case, but it kind of looked like it at times. But with that one goal with, bad, passed by our goalkeeper, Drake Callender. It just seemed like everybody it just went downhill from there. I was very concerned from the very beginning when we started bringing all these old guys. I mean, Messi is that one guy you say, I don't care how old he is, you bring him in. It makes complete sense. But then when you start bringing all his buddies in, and Suarez has been great. He's been, player of the month twice in a row. So he's still got something there, but they are showing age and they are older. And that was a concern that can they, last in these kind of tournaments, and more so, can they last in an MLS season? I've constantly been saying that this team is built for these shorter tournaments because of their age. Maybe they can rally up enough energy to put together a month's worth of games in something like, we did it with the League's Cup, right? Or maybe they could do it with a Champions Cup. But because I don't feel like they can, have the legs to last an entire MLS season. I mean, we've already seen how much time Messi has been sitting out with hamstring issues. But then again, everybody on the team gets hamstrings. I mean, everybody's signed up for at least one this year, it seems like.
Absolutely. Let's just go back to the first leg, if we could, because, you know, that was a great moment by Thomas Aviles, who got the first goal that of the first leg, you know, early on, just, you know, in open play in the 19th minute. I thought that was a great goal, and I thought, you know, Miami had a great advantage until David Ruiz, David Ruiz Ochoa got double yellowed and then sent off, and both fouls were just ridiculous. And then you lose that advantage, and then Monterrey took over. And it's like, you know, why is it that these players cannot pay attention to what's going on, and you put yourselves in the hole, you're down to 10 men the rest of the way, and then Monterrey does that?
Yeah, well, Ruiz is one of those young guys. He's still, I think, 19 years old. He's still learning. He's going to make those boneheaded mistakes. So it did not surprise me that he, you know, does stuff like that. And he quite often, you know, goes in for late challenges, or, you know, he's a little bit reckless still. He's still got a lot to learn. He's one of those players that you might look at and say, well, maybe he shouldn't be starting. But with, I heard you talking about before, with the you know, the rules of MLS, you know, we're very top heavy. You know, we put a lot of money in a few players. So then, you know, that middle to lower level tier talent are all kids, and they're going to make mistakes, and you know, it killed the game. Because, you know, I thought, you know, we're playing, you know, kind of like some extent, you know, no Messi, or a little bit of our B team, if you will, in some ways, you know, so many injuries. And I thought we held our own at Chase Stadium in that first leg up until those red cards. I felt pretty good that, hey, if we held our own without Messi, what are we going to do when we go to Mexico with Messi? We might have a chance here. Of course, in the pit of my stomach, I didn't fully believe that we did, you know, I you know, but I was, of course, hopeful.
Yeah, it really is. It's just really is, and it's really a shame, because I thought they were going to do something big against Monterrey. I thought that they were going to try and psych them out, you know, not just, you know, the talent on the pitch, but, you know, these little, you know, mind games that, of course, what Monterrey just did after the as you said, you know, after the first leg loss. They were challenging Messi. Say he wanted, I forget who it was on Monterrey, said, you know, Messi looked like he wanted to fight. And it's like, wait, yeah. Messi wants to fight? Messi had the look of trying to start a fight? I mean, look, I can understand he's upset and he's, you know, frustrated. And I know all the players on Inter Miami were frustrated, obviously, but Messi wanted to fight? I mean, that's those are words that are like meaningless to me. Because when we've ever seen Messi intentionally start a fight, whether it's with Barcelona or with Paris Saint-Germain or playing for Argentina, I've never seen him try to start a fight at all.
Yeah, it was surprising because, you know, what was he so upset about? You know, it couldn't have been the things that the Monterrey coach said before the match about, you know, the referees potentially getting paid off or whatever. You know, he's saying that they need to be on the lookout because CONCACAF wants Messi in the final. You know, there was comments, but that can't be what it meant. That can't piss him off. I mean, that's the kind of things that you should be used to if you're Messi. Everybody may think the fix is in when you're on the field. But, you know, there was nothing, in my opinion, on the field that was so egregious that somebody that's not even in the game would get so upset and start yelling and screaming. But apparently it happened, and there's, you know, we've been fined or whatever. And the funny thing is with the mind games too is Monterrey had banned Messi's bodyguard from roaming the sidelines like he does here in MLS.
Oh,
games.
Wow.
You know, he roams up and down the sidelines, and
yep,
wherever Messi is, he is. And he was not allowed to do that in Monterrey. So,
wow.
You know, that's to me, that's just more mind games. That's just trying to make Messi less comfortable. You know, and so that they can get a win. Now, of course, they didn't really need to worry about that, but taking whatever advantage they could get. But you know, until we change the way some of these rules are in MLS, like you were saying before, I don't think it's going to be. This is going to continue. You know, we just don't have. We've got to be able to. You know, like Ruiz, for example. He would never make it on Monterrey, but yet he's one of our starters. So the drop-off from our star players to our middle to our lower level is just so huge that, you know, we're handcuffed to some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you completely. I mean, until everything is removed across the board, then MLS teams can improve their rosters. And, you know, I'm sorry, you know, the GAM, the TAM, WHAM, BAM, thank you, ma'am, whatever it is, it's got to go. It really does, because if we're not going to grow up, when are we going to grow up, you know?
Yeah, and they're apparently loosening that up this summer a little bit, but I've read through it, and it's still really confusing. They just, in some ways, made it a little bit more confusing, but they're loosening it up a little bit, but they just need to, you know, they're far enough along. Let's just, you know, have a salary cap, have a salary basement as well, and then just, you know, but that cap needs to be much larger, and just let the teams do what they want to do.
Exactly. That's all we're asking. Now, I have to ask you this. I'm assuming you've seen this on social media, especially on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Monterrey fans taking an Inter Miami Messi jersey and basically doing a hat dance on it or stomping on it. I mean, I've never thought. I mean, I don't know what they did at Real Madrid whenever they played Barcelona and Messi, but wow, the complete and utter, I will gently say respectfully, disrespecting Messi, but wow, you know, that's just amazing to see that.
I love it. I love it. That's the kind of thing they should do. And, you know, I don't care who he is. He's not on your team. So, yeah, burn that jersey. Step on it, whatever you want to do. That's what you should do. You should support your team. And, you know, and Messi's that kind of player that, you know, we've got a ton of new fans all around the world just because of him. They're not Inter Miami fans. They're just Messi fans. And, you know, they'll come and go with him. But, you know, guys like us, I mean, I'm a fan of the team, and he's with the team. I like him. If he wasn't with the team, I'd say screw him.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I like that passion.
No, don't get me wrong. I love it too. I mean, listen, this is what we want. We don't want it. We don't want anything fraudulent. We don't want anything fake.
Right.
We want to see, you know, passionate love for the sport, passionate love for the club that you support, and everything and anything that goes along with it. That's all we want to see, because we can't have it force fed. It's got to be done in an organic way. I agree with you. This is and absolutely it has to be like that. But still, though, at the end of the day, overall, what's your gut feeling with this club right now and the way they've been constructed? Do you feel they got to do something in the summer window to improve it? I mean, we all know League's Cup is coming once again. No Open Cup this year for Inter Miami. What's your gut feeling for the season right now?
Well, just be, you know, as far as the MLS season, just be good enough to, you know, be a home team in the playoffs, something like that. I think that's fine. I don't care about the supporter shield. You know, this team doesn't need to worry about that. We're going to be resting players way too much for that. So don't even worry about it. Just get in the playoffs and maybe be get some home team advantage. That's good enough. But you know, I still think we're built for a small tournament. So I think, you know, they won't say this. They'll probably say MLS Cup is their next focus, because it is more prestigious than League's Cup. You know, League's Cup is probably more realistic. It's a shorter tournament that we can maybe rally the troops behind and if they're healthy and put in a good performance and, you know, do it again, you know. But I think it's going to be a lot of what we've seen so far. We're going to see Messi, you know, in a couple of games, out three or four games. I mean, and it is something to be concerned about, the amount of injuries that this team has. I know every team has injuries, but as of, I think it was like last week or 2 weeks ago, we had more injuries than any other team in the league. And I'm not sure where we stack up today, but, you know, we've got, I think, 3 hamstring injuries currently and 4 or 5 knee injuries that are out. There's something going on down here that every single player is getting hurt. I don't know if they're training too hard, not training enough. I don't know what it is, but this team is limping along. I mean, you've got some of your best players that are constantly out. Now Campana is out with a hamstring, just as, you know, somebody like Kromoski is coming back. Obviously Messi came back, and, you know, the injuries are the biggest concern with this team. I know every team deals with it, but, you know, our depth isn't good enough without those injured players. So, you know, I think at best, let's get in the playoffs and then let's try to win League's Cup. I think that's a good goal. But also need to be concerned about how long does Tata have? Because right now, as far as what's on X down here, everybody's just saying fire Tata. So he's on the hot seat, at least according to the fans. I don't know about the ownership, but with the fans, he's on the hot seat right now.
Nope, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll just have to wait and see what they're going to do for the rest of the year, and hopefully they will go out and they'll try and do a job again. We'll see what happens. But anyway, Peter, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it, as always. Good luck with the rest of the season. Of course, we'll see what they do at Leagues Cup. And once again, thank you for joining me tonight.
My pleasure.
All right. And once again, Peter Brown of Football Miami TV. As once again, Inter Miami falls to Monterrey in the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup on aggregate. And it's just really disheartening to see that happen. You know, once again, what are you going to do? This is the situation that they put themselves in, and they fell apart, and we'll see what happens moving forward. Joining me right now is a gentleman that covers the Columbus Crew as they do the impossible. It took penalties to do it, but the Columbus Crew are on to the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, defeating the mighty UNAL Tigres. Adam Miller, massive report. Adam, just give me your thoughts, sir.
Yeah, I wish I could give them in a succinct way other than thrilled to be going through and thrilled with how, I guess, how the game went, even though it was obviously a bit of a disaster of a start. But I think it's just one of those things that's kind of a famous night for the club and for the fans, and puts us in an exciting position, obviously, moving forward. Now we play the other team in Monterrey in the next leg, but yeah, just couldn't be happier and more excited. And it's one of those weeks where you just kind of feel thankful to be a soccer fan and to be a Crew fan and just get to enjoy those moments.
Let me ask you this, in both legs combined, do you think this was the best matchup the Columbus Crew could actually take against Tigres? Because, you know, both men that scored in the first leg scored in the second leg. Ginac for Tigres, Diego Rossi for the Crew. I mean, it just looked like both sides were equally matched.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. I think across the legs of, or across the competition between all of the MLS teams and all of the Liga MX teams, I think this was far and away the most in terms of on the field play. I would make the argument that I think the Crew were probably better for more of the tie. But I think, I mean, just when you watch those games, both 1-1, same goal scorers, obviously all that stuff. But I think both teams kind of had their moments over the course of the two legs, which leads me to feel like it was pretty equal over the course of the two legs. And obviously going to penalties, you know, that's the ultimate separator, but takes a lot to get there. And I think both sides were capable of having of some good moments, but also put under pressure and kind of up against it at certain times as well. So I thought it was pretty even, and like I said, kind of thankful that we came out on top and get to keep moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, what we saw from Patrick Schulte was a tale of poor and exhilaration, because let's be honest, the swing and miss was just a very bad look for him. I know he's still young. I know this is going to be his first full year as a, you know, in the MLS level, not in MLS Next Pro, but still though, You know, when you swing and miss like that as a goalkeeper, and then you get the ball taken, well, it wasn't really taken off his foot, but, you know, he swung and missed and gave Gignac a free chance, and he converted it. That had to be a really, really bad moment for him.
Yeah, it wasn't good, and it's probably the worst possible way that they could have started that match. I was talking to my dad about the game the other day, actually, and was telling him how I had to watch delayed just because I had some things going on, and I was staying up late, and I sat down, and that happened almost immediately, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, just the worst possible way to start. I will say huge credit to him for just rebounding, obviously, in a big moment. And obviously, I mean, came up huge there at the end, and I thought he played well pretty much after the first 10 minutes, which were a disaster from the Crew. But yeah, definitely not the way that you'd want to start any game or any tie, but especially, you know, being down in Mexico up against Tigres, who are, you know, no pushover. So I have to admit, when that happened, I wasn't feeling good about the rest of the night. But yeah, credit to Schulte and the Crew and everyone else for kind of sticking with it and pulling it out in the end.
How many times did you have to basically grasp your chair when you're seeing Tigres scoring goals but wiped out for offside?
Yeah, too many for comfort, that's for sure. I mean, that first half was one of the worst that I've seen the Crew play in a long time. And I think it's fair to say that they're a bit fortunate that they weren't down more going into halftime. And, you know, the one that's right after the first goal, I don't remember, maybe it's the sixth or seventh minute where they're playing out of the back again and it kind of gets picked off Derek Jones. I mean, that one looks, the replays weren't great. Looks like it could have been one that could have gone either way. So I think they're fortunate there. But yeah, I mean, you never want to see your team give up a goal, and you certainly don't want to see them give up, you know, three and then have two called back. And, you know, you never want to be relying on the refs, I guess, in CONCACAF is where I'm headed with this. So too many times for comfort.
No, absolutely. And then there was that one moment where Gignac was in an offside position. He was in an offside position, and then all of a sudden, you know, Tigres puts the ball in the back of the net, and the Crew are yelling for offside, and then John Strong on the broadcast on Fox Sports 1 saying the referee allowed the goal. Like, how do you allow the goal when Gignac is in a blade? I mean, like, I know he probably got hurt or something. He probably got tackled down. It wasn't called. But that's an offside position. How do you allow a goal like that to stand? Because, you know, passive offside has been gone for a very, very long time. So there's no way that should have stood. And thankfully, VAR said, well, listen, we can't let that happen. And thankfully, they took it off.
Yeah.
But still, though.
I couldn't believe it when I was watching it that – because you're right, the ref basically made him go to midfield and said it was a good goal and then made VAR overturn it. And I just couldn't believe that was the point that we were at. I mean, it was blatant and clear offsides. Obviously, they got it right in the end. I will say, like, I can't believe it took them that long to look at that. And, you know, that one was pretty obvious. And then the one on Yeboah in the second half, I'm not sure if you're planning on talking about that or not. But, I mean, that's a penalty every day of the week. It's
absolutely
a penalty every day of the week, and they didn't even look at it, and they're spending, you know, 20 minutes in the first half looking at everything, and they didn't even look at that one. So that was frustrating. It's CONCACAF. It is what it is. But, I don't know enough about all of the processes and how they make the decisions on what gets looked at and what doesn't. But the fact that the Yeboah one wasn't looked at all and the other things were looked at constantly was puzzling to me.
Absolutely. I mean, Stu Holden was outraged. I was outraged. I know every Columbus Crew supporter was outraged. The truth of the matter is this. Yeboah was taken out, not by the first defender, by the second defender. The second defender gave him a hip check right into the stomach, knocked him down. Did he get a touch of the ball? Mm-hmm. It didn't look like he got a touch of the ball. Should have been reviewed by VAR. And, you know, they should have contacted the referee to tell him, come to the monitor, take a look for yourself, and you have to see what we see because this is a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And they did none of it. And that's what really drives you crazy because, you know, if this was UEFA, if this was CONMEBOL, if this was Asia, Africa, I don't know if Oceania has a Champions League, but if they have VAR and they're looking at it, and by God, you know they would have overturned the non-call into a penalty for the crew.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing that I think is frustrating, is you probably see that called everywhere else in the world. And at least, like, I was talking to some other people, some guys at Massive Report about it. Like, it's one thing if they go and they look at it and the ref decides, you know what, for me that's not a penalty, whatever. Like, I could at least – I wouldn't have agreed with it, but I could at least live with it if he goes and takes a second look. But the fact that they didn't even send him over to the monitor and make him look again was, again, baffling and infuriating for those of us watching, especially those of us with – crew-colored glasses on, and just given that we were down a goal at that time, it was very frustrating and just frankly unbelievable for a competition that is supposed to be of the highest level, at least of club soccer in this region.
Absolutely, and of course, let's go right to the penalties. I thought Schulte was going to win it for the crew. I mean, the first two penalty kickers that he faced, Gignac, Pizarro, I thought after stopping those two, which is a miracle within itself, it's a miracle. I thought he was going to stop, if not the third, I thought he was going to stop the fourth. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, but still, though,
sure,
that was amazing from Schulte.
Yeah, just, again, unbelievable. You mentioned it earlier, how quickly he's kind of gotten to – I don't know if I would say he's elite yet, but he's certainly rising the ranks. And again, I just think it's a massive credit to him as I think he's 23. So a 23-year-old making a huge mistake early on in the game and then being able to kind of come up big at the end and block out sort of those mistakes and essentially, like you're saying, win the game or win the tie or make the crew advance, however, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I mean – And to do it against those two guys who I think are probably the two of the best penalty takers for Tigres. I mean, Gignac certainly. I don't know about Pizarro, but just to do it against those guys who have been in that situation before and done it time and again, and for him to come up big is impressive in its own right, and I think it's doubly impressive after the start to the game that he had.
No, absolutely. And then what do you say about Max Arfston, who got the game-winning penalty?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who had Max Arfston scoring a game-winning penalty kick in a shootout in Mexico on their bingo card is probably should go buy a lottery ticket or something. I wouldn't have expected it. I didn't even expect him to take one as I was watching it. But, I mean, what can you say about it? It was cool as you like, and sent the keeper the wrong way. And yeah, I mean, it's for a kid who he was a draft pick a year ago, he's playing college soccer 2 years ago, to step up in that moment and deliver in that, that was a tough spot as well because Cucho had missed and Tigres, if he missed, would have been right back in it. So, all credit to him for coming on late and playing well and then stepping up in that big moment for another young kid. I mean, it's a huge credit to him and his mentality, and I would also say to the staff for just having trust in their guys and putting them in positions to succeed.
Absolutely. Well, Adam, all I can say is this. This is going to be the toughest task the Columbus Crew are going to have. Monterrey is no joke. They are a well-oiled machine. Do you think they're ready for this, and are you ready for this? Do you think everyone in Columbus, Ohio is ready for this?
Yeah, I think – I mean, I know from the fan base perspective, we're all already looking forward to it and buzzing for it and excited. I know it's going to be a raucous atmosphere in Columbus. I know there's a good portion of people who are, if they haven't already, they're looking into making the trip down to Monterrey for this one. Like you say, I mean, for me, they're the best team top to bottom in the competition, so it's certainly not going to be an easy task. But I think it's one that you kind of relish if you're a crew fan, like you don't really have much to lose. Everyone will be expecting Monterrey to go through and probably win it if they get to the final. But I think the crew have a couple of things that maybe Monterrey haven't seen before. And I think it's one of those matchups where the styles are so completely different that if the crew can kind of do what they're really good at consistently, especially at home, I think they're within a shout of getting to the finals. So that's obviously what we're hoping for. We'll see. But I know that I'm sure that the players and the staff are ready for it, and the fans and everyone who follows the team and covers the team is very excited. So it's going to be kind of a weird waiting game as we wait. I think we wait like 2 weeks till that kicks off. But, everybody's going to be up for it.
Absolutely. Adam, listen, talk to you in the semifinals. Good luck with the Crew in the Champions Cup, and we'll see what happens against Monterrey. Hopefully it'll be a good one, and hopefully Columbus will come out on top. You have a good night. Thanks again.
Appreciate it. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you soon. Once again, that is Adam Miller from Massive Report, as the Columbus Crew defeats Tigres in the second leg on penalties, 4-3. And after a 1-1 draw in both legs through regulation and extra time. Join me right now on the Liga MX side of things, of course, Charlie Assam from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation. Charlie, welcome back. And, I got to tell you, as we go through these matches now involving Liga MX, and let's start off with Club America, that was probably the most satisfying victories by Club America in a very long time. Business, make no mistake, we're not going to mess around. They took on the Revolution, and they just basically squashed them.
Hey, Dan, great to be back. I think you nailed it. I would describe the way this series went as a combination of two things. So the first thing is, I think America, they played the way they played the entire tournament. So this was their fifth and sixth games, or matches respectively in this tournament. And all six matches have been played with extremely high intensity. They've really dominated all of their matches. They've created the clearest opportunities. They've lacked scoring in a couple of them, but when they have scored, it's come in barrages usually, and that's what happened in these two matches with New England. They just kept it coming. They did not stop at any point. And then you combine that with New England. I was just, totally taken aback with, just frankly, how bad, the Revolution's defense looked, especially. Losing so many balls, in their lower half, big mistakes by the keeper. They just made it way too easy for this high quality America side. So I would say, just to summarize it, quite easily, I would say it was basically a combination of those two things.
What's really interesting is, Henry Martin, Alejandro Zendejas, also Brian Rodriguez, they've scored in both legs. The quality that Club America had under Andre Jardin was just tremendous. What has he meant, this head coach? What has he done for Club America, unlike maybe his predecessors have done for Club America in the past in this competition?
That's a great point. I think if there's one thing I can say about Jardine, it's the consistency he's brought to America. Usually, Liga MX teams tend to be inconsistent. I say that's the best way to describe most clubs. Even the bigger ones, they go on these roller coaster rides throughout the different seasons. And something he's done in his time with America, he's made them extremely consistent. So like this season, for instance, he only has one loss in 14 Liga MX games. He's tied in first place. He's dominated all six games of the CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. So I would just say it's been an insane consistency that he's brought to this team. And it's you've definitely seen it reflected on the pitch, and it's also, reflected into their results. You haven't seen this team dip so far yet. And now, the final stages of the CONCACAF Champions Cup coming up, and then also the Liga MX playoffs just, 3 weeks away. We'll see if they can, finish the play here. But I think that's what Jardine has meant more than anything else to this tremendously talented squad.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, that was a 9-2 aggregate destruction by Club America against the Revolution. Moving on to Pachuca, they destroyed Herediano in the opening leg, 5 away goals down in Costa Rica. I know 2-1, it's dead, but still, though, what they've done is just amazing. I mean, my goodness, Salomon Rondon, another hat trick in the Champions Cup. I mean, I just give him the golden boot now. You know, just give it to him. What he has done single-handedly in this competition has been nothing short but sensational, absolutely sensational.
Yeah, you said it. Rondon was absolutely the player of the series for, you know, this specific series, and then for Pachuca in the previous series. It was the Rondon show in the first leg, basically. Again, he was given tons of space, surprisingly, by Herediano in that first leg. After they saw what he did destroy the Philadelphia Union in the second leg, I was surprised that they gave him that much space to work with in the first leg. They did. He made them pay for it again. And then this second leg was just basically, you know, game management. And then he still figured out a way to show up even then. So what it goes to prove, at least in my mind, is just what Rondon means to this offense and to this team, and how important it is for him to be involved. I think that's the biggest takeaway. It's the key for Pachuca every single game has to be, you know, get Rondon in rhythm and get him involved in the match, because if you do that, chances of winning are just, you know, just go through the roof, as he's proven so far.
Absolutely. If I could ask you, he is from Mexico, correct?
No. No, Rondon is South American. I believe he's Venezuelan, if I'm not mistaken.
Venezuelan, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, there goes my theory. I was about to say, if he was from Mexico, why hasn't the Mexican national team used him? But now we know why.
Yeah.
But
that would be a very good question, Dan, for sure. I think everyone in Mexico wishes that, yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, you could use a guy like that to, you know, do something much better on the international stage, that's for sure. But, you know, hey, what are you going to do? But still, though, just to preview quickly, Club America and Pachuca, is this going to be a really fireworks type of tie between these two clubs, obviously, because, I mean, it's going to take a freight train to go through a freaking brick wall to whoever's going to take advantage of this thing.
Yeah, I would say it definitely is going to be one. What's so interesting is these two clubs have very offensive-minded, dynamic, strategist, you know, managers in Jardine and Guillermo Almada. You know, Almada, I think he resembles Jardine, or Jardine resembles Almada, I should say, because Almada arrived to Liga MX before Jardine did. But, these are two managers who are extremely offensive-minded, very dynamic. They like to have possession of the ball. They're creative with the ball. They have extremely talented players. You know, American Fidalgo, and, you said it, Sendejas and you know, Henry Martin and, you know, Richard Sanchez. And in terms of Pachuca, you know, Idrissi has just been fantastic on the ball. I just can't believe how good he's been in both CONCACAF, you know, the Champions Cup, and Liga MX matches. You know, Rondon, as we've mentioned. I mean, they have so many skilled players up front that just make them so dangerous. And, yeah, it should be a it'll definitely be a show.
Now we have to talk about Tigres. And, you know, I had Adam Miller on before, who covers the Crew on Massive Report. Do you think these two clubs were evenly matched?
I think they were. I think they were very even. I think they were evenly matched. I also think at the same time that Tigres were a bit passive again in the first leg. So all three of Tigres' first legs, I feel they were extremely passive and they were always happy with the draws. So they were happy to bring back the result and, you know, try to, solve the game at home, basically. And what that does is it gives you, you know, minimal margin to work with. And if you make one mistake, it could end up biting you in the butt. And I think that's what happened here. So you know, they're playing with these minimal margins. I don't know what they were doing here in the second leg, leaving their player, their defense one on one, man to man, basically in the Columbus goal. It seemed as if, you know, by the way the players were distributed on the pitch or on the field, it seemed as if Columbus were actually winning because they countered Tigres on their goal when Tigres, in fact, had the lead. So I just didn't understand what they were doing there. But, yeah, it all comes down to the fact that they were very passive, and I just think Tigres have shown and have proven that if they actually try to go out and take the ball away from their rivals and actually attack and be creative with the ball, they can do it as good as anyone, as good as America and Pachuca and Rayados. But for some reason, Tiboldi has chosen to sit back, kind of wait, a more passive approach, and that's the risk that you run when that's how you choose to play.
Exactly. What did you think of the officiating in this one? Did you think it was even? Do you think maybe there's some issues here? Because honestly, I thought at times the officiating was not up to par for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a case to be made. I guess if you're trying to prove that they were maybe a little more, favoring Tigres a little more, I guess there's a case to be made there. If you're asking me, you know, in all honesty, my take from it is CONCACAF reffing, in my opinion, has always been subpar. I've never thought real highly of CONCACAF reffing anyway, either at a club level or a national team level. You know, we're talking about World Cup qualifiers. It's just never been it's never been to the standard that it should. And as you mentioned a while ago, you know, if this was, you know, UEFA or, a more serious confederation, it would be tons different. But to me, it's just CONCACAF being CONCACAF. I can understand why you could have seen them being a little, you know, I guess favoring Tigres in a sense. But to me, it's just they consistently have doubtful calls, and it just so happens, you know, in my take, that they tended to favor Tigres a bit more in this one.
Because let me just say this, and I want to be fair here, you know, to the Liga MX sides, as just as, like, you know, I support the MLS
sure.
sides, but I want to be fair to both. Tigres doesn't
sure.
need the help. Tigres does not need the help. They are good enough and strong enough on their own. You understand what I'm saying, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Because to be honest with you, I thought there was maybe one of those two offside calls, not the one where Jinak was in an offside position and then they put the ball in the net and then they counted it, which originally they shouldn't have done that. But I would admit that earlier in the first half, I thought maybe one or two of those offside calls should have been goals for Tigres. That's how I feel.
Which one was that though? Which one is the one you feel should have been should have counted?
In the first half, after probably around maybe the 10th
after
or
the
15th
goal?
Minute, after Gignac got the gift, there was like maybe
yeah.
one or two chances that Tigres should have put the ball into the back of the net, which I thought they did.
Yes,
but it was
yes.
wiped out for offside.
Yeah, in my take, I felt that in the end. It was, I thought, you know, both offside calls were fair. I think the refs ended up getting it right. I thought mm-hmm. VAR did, you know, VAR did, check it, even though it took them much longer than they should have. Again, I think that's a CONCACAF factor in it. But in the end, I felt that they ended up getting it right, fortunately. And you know, no sides were affected in my take. But I agree, mm-hmm. Tigres don't need the help. If there's a team that doesn't need the help, it's Tigres, no doubt.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I'm sorry. I just want to add, you know, I just want to throw in, you know, huge credit to Columbus for, you know, managing the game correctly. I think, you know, full credit to them for staying in the game. They battled it out. They never made it easy for Tigres, even when they were trailing, even with that goal in the second or third minute, that gift, as you said, you know, a minute ago. They stayed in the game. They searched for their chance. They got it. They took advantage of it on the road in a very tough environment like the Universitario is. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, ref, you know, with ref's help or not, you know, Gignac missing, you know, open chances at the end or not, missing, you know, a PK shot that he usually doesn't miss. You know, he's usually very clutch in these situations. Today is probably one of the first that I've ever witnessed from him that he wasn't. Not today, I should say. Tuesday, sorry. But full credit to Columbus for hanging in there, and they got the result they deserved.
Oh, absolutely. They deserve the result, and that was also a shocker, seeing Schulte stopping two penalties on Gignac and Pizarro,
oh, yeah.
Because I would never have guessed that he was going to get, not just guess right, but guessing right and stopping them, that's a miracle.
Right. And especially Gignac, you know, we talked about this, I believe, you know, from our first show, you know, the first week of matches back in February, you know, Gignac has always, if there's one thing you can say about Gignac for sure, is he is clutch as clutch, you know, comes. And, you know, even if it was a gift, he found a way to get his name on the score sheet again in this game. But then, you know, when the moment really counted, toward the end, you know, he misses that open shot as he's falling back. He sends it over the crossbar, and then, you know, he misses the PK in the shootout. But, yeah, huge credit to Schulte, you know, for stopping a clutch player. You know, Pizarro, you could say, you know, it could have gone either way. I mean, he's really good, obviously, but it could have gone either way. But Gignac, there's just no way I would have ever guessed that Schulte would have stopped that, and he did so. So full credit to him and the entire, you know, Columbus Crew team.
Absolutely. Definitely. Both sides I thought were very good. And once again, I guess more questions than answers with Tigres, but we'll see what happens moving on. And now, of course, Monterrey. What can you say about Monterrey? All I know is Monterrey did what they had to do. We all know in the first leg that red card to David Ruiz Ochoa was a big, big moment for Monterrey. They got those two goals in the first leg, and then they thoroughly dismantled old men Inter Miami and became grumpy old men Inter Miami. What can you say about what Fernando Ortiz has done to get this team prepared and just going out there and doing a job?
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest, I didn't see Rayados doing anything, you know, really much different than what they usually do. Actually, if you look at the match, like, if you just observe kind of what happened in that first half on Wednesday night, what Rayados actually did was they just sat back. Like, they just gave Miami full possession of the ball the entire first half. They just said, here you go, come at us. I dare you. And Miami were just, you know, Inter Miami were just unable to create. But if Inter Miami had, I think, more dynamic players to go along with, you know, Messi, with Jordi Alba, with Luis Suarez and Busquets, if they had more talented players, more dynamic, if they were, I guess, more quality on the ball, if they could create a little more for themselves, I think it would have been a much different story. But yeah, what was basically happening is every 5 or 10 seconds, Messi was getting the ball and his teammates were just saying, here, you know, make some magic happen. As he's coming out of an injury, you know, as he's aging, and players around him don't help either. But yeah, Dan Ortiz came out with a game plan of, you know, let's sit back, let's wait, let's defend, let's take advantage of our opportunities when we get them. And he did, you know, another gift, an absolute gift by the keeper. His name is Callender. Yeah.
Great Callender.
By Callender. Right. Yeah. An absolute gift by Callender. Big mistake. And even then, I don't feel that was the tipping point of the game. I think the tipping point was Berterame's goal. The second goal was the moment that just killed the match for sure. But yeah, huge mistake by Callender in a game where, you know, you were just one goal down. They needed the two goals, but you know, it was still within reach, you know?
No, it really was. And I'll be honest with you. We all know the mind games that loves to be played in the Mexican media when it comes to football. But wow,
yeah.
I never thought I would ever hear an assistant coach or a player saying, you know, when in the first leg after the match, Messi wanted to fight. I'm like, I've never seen him, you know, show fists. I've never seen him, you know, antagonizing or trying to start a fight, whether he was with Barcelona or with Paris Saint-Germain.
Right.
Even those derbies against Real Madrid, I have never seen Messi actually intentionally start a fight. Have you?
Not really. And I actually think that this whole thing was actually started by Dan Ortiz. I think he was the starter of the entire issue when he said in the pregame presser, you know, before the first leg, where he mentions something to the likes of, you know, Messi, you know, when Messi's on the pitch, the refs call the game differently. I agree and disagree to an extent. I agree because, you know, I think that, you know, Messi has been kicked around so much that you almost are begging the refs to kind of protect him because you don't want to see, you know, a player like that go, you know, have to end his career early due to, you know, an insane amount of fouls. But I also don't agree with, you know, the statement in and of itself. I don't think it's something that any head coach should say, but I think what Ortiz was trying to accomplish, as you said, Dan, were, you know, is, you know, this mental, I guess, warfare, if you will, where he's kind of conditioning the refs to, like, if Messi's on the pitch, I've now put you guys in the spotlight, you know? So I think he kind of got what he wanted. He kind of got Messi to kind of be a little, if you will, but I agree with you. I've never seen Messi, you know, be one to go look for a fight. And if anyone caused this, I think it's Ortiz with his initial statements.
No, I would agree with you. I mean, I don't mind the mind games, to be honest with you. I really don't mind it, but I was like, wow, really going after Messi the way he did, that really shocked
right.
the heck out of me. I was like, oh my God, what the hell is this all of a sudden? I don't remember hearing about Messi trying to start a fight after a match, whether they, you know, winning or losing or drawing or whatever. I mean, I've never seen that before. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, and like, you know, all that being said, I also feel that it just, you know, Messi wasn't in, you know, real playing condition. I think, you know, he was out on the pitch. He mostly walked around. They had him, you know, as a center forward, you know, in a position where he would, you know, he would be required to run the least, basically. And I just feel he wasn't ready. I just feel he was kind of forced out there sooner than he should have been. His teammates around him did not help. Jordi Alba did not have a good game at all. Suarez was, you know, non-participant most of the match, really. You know, his teammates just weren't able to make a difference, to get any separation. I guess, you know, Rayados on defense, Gerardo Arteaga is playing at just an amazing level. You know, up and down that left side, just amazing what he's doing, what he's providing on offense also. But yeah, I just feel Inter Miami just weren't up to it. Didn't show the quality in either leg, just didn't show enough quality. Mental games are not. I mean, I feel that, you know, Rayados did have the upper hand, and I think they are the deserved team to be moving on here.
No, I agree with you there. And, of course, when did you ever think you'd ever see a club like Inter Miami or a head coach like Tata Martino not making any substitutions? That was crazy.
Oh, for sure, for sure. That's a great point. Absolutely. I mean, I can't believe no adjustments at all. I mean, that's so wild to see, especially in today's soccer, today's football. Yeah, there were definitely adjustments to be made. That was very, very surprising to say the least. Especially with them showing such a, I don't know how to put this, you know, but if they were, you know, in control of the match, if they were creating, you know, these dangerous chances, if they were close to scoring, I'd get it. But with them being so far away from scoring and, you know, to actually making this an interesting match, because it really never was really never got interesting throughout the match. It was surprising to say the least that he chose to go there.
So, Charlie, now let's talk about this other semifinal, the Columbus Crew and Monterrey.
Yeah.
How does Ortiz look at this? How do you think he has to go into this? I'm assuming Columbus is going into Monterrey for the first leg, and then Monterrey goes back to Columbus in the second leg, but we'll see the official schedule when we get to it. What worries you against the Crew? Because so far, Wilfred Nancy has shown that he's got them working like a well-oiled machine, but, you know, I agree that Monterrey is 5 million steps higher than the Crew, but what do you see in this other semifinal?
So the way I look at it, I guess from Monterrey's point of view, basically, is if there's one thing that makes Monterrey struggle, you know, apart from their rivals being intense, because they struggle with intense rivals, and that's one thing I think Columbus definitely have. They're very intense. You know, they bring an extremely high level of intensity. They're gritty, and Rayados tend to struggle, you know, tons with those sorts of teams, because Rayados are the complete opposite. As I've told you, you know, before, they tend to just kind of float around on the pitch. They're kind of, you know, very comfortable in that zone defense. So the grittiness is one. And the second thing is speed. Any team that has a speedy player makes them struggle tremendously, because they, for the most part, have slow defenders. So, and they really, you know, have, you know, for the past, you know, decade, pretty much, they really aren't characterized by having, you know, quick defenders. So any speedy striker or, you know, forward or winger tend to hurt them a lot. And that's what I think Columbus has, you know, that actually got Tigres in the game tying goal the other night. You know, Columbus speediness, Tigres dared to leave them, you know, man to man, and that burned them. So I think Dan Ortiz has to be very careful with the defensive matchups that he leaves, and especially considering that he also likes to sit back and wait for rivals. I think that's the way he'll approach it, at least in the first leg. I believe the first leg is to be played in Columbus, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I think it's in Columbus. So mm-hmm. I think that first leg, he will sit back and wait and be careful, because, you know, Columbus can burn them with their speed. So that's what my approach would be to it, and just kind of knowing Tano Ortiz and kind of knowing this, you know, the way this team works, that's the way I would expect them to approach it, kind of cautiously.
No, I understand, and you got to be, because this is the semifinals, and, you know, these are big, big games towards the back end of this month, and then, of course, it depends on who's going to be hosting, or will it be single, you know, maybe some other location in CONCACAF for this final. So it's really going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, but, you know, Monterrey is definitely going to have their hands full, but, you know, I think it's going to be a blockbuster between Pachuca and Club America in the other semifinal, so we'll see what happens. And, Charlie, listen, as always, thank you very much for your insights. I really do appreciate it, not just for myself, but, of course, the audience is very happy to get, you know, your takes on, you know, what goes on in the CONCACAF Champions Cup through Liga MX eyes, and I'm very happy that you're here on the show, and we can talk about this. And I appreciate your time as always. Thank you again, Charlie, for joining us.
I appreciate it, Dan, and thanks for having me on. And looking forward to our next meet for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks again, and talk to you soon.
For sure. Bye bye.
All right, Charlie Astom from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation, as we talk about all these games involving the CONCACAF Champions Cup. We're down to the semifinals. Once again, it will be Pachuca versus Club America, and it will be the Columbus Crew, the lone MLS side, against Monterrey. I want to thank my guests tonight, Peter Brown of Football Miami TV, Adam Miller of The Massive Report, and Charlie Astom of FMF State of Mind, over at SB Nation. My name is Daniel Foyerstein. Join me this coming Monday night as we talk to my next guests on my regular Foyerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. And then, of course, don't forget, third round action for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, my name is Daniel Foyerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care, so long, and have a good night. This has been the 2024 CONCACAF Champions Cup Quarterfinals Review Show. Have a good night, everybody.